My next guest is Becca Corbell. She's the Director of Programs and Operations at the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Becca Corbell, welcome to Driving Home the Faith.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to join you.
Well, it's good to have you here. And our colleague on the morning show, the Sunrise Morning Show, Matt Swaim, I know has been to the Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton many times since he lives close by. I've never been there, but I'm really looking forward to this interview because it looks like a really interesting and fascinating series of events that you have coming up this summer. Of course, many people are firming up their summer travel plans or other plans to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the country's founding, and the Sisters of Charity are just a few years away from their own bicentennial. So your ministry into the U.S. is almost as old as the U.S. itself. Tell us a little bit about the Shrine's America 250 initiative.
Well, it's so beautiful that you mentioned the Sisters in the same breath as the anniversary for the nation. We have a special exhibit that we just opened in March that focuses on exactly that. So that's a big initiative this year for the 250th. It's called Do the Good. It's based on a quote by St. Vincent de Paul. The full quote is, "Do the good whenever it presents itself." And so what we've done is examine the stories of these sisters, starting here in Emmitsburg and then spreading out all over the country, and what they've done for our nation throughout our 250-year history. Three of whom are actually Sisters of Charity from Cincinnati, so really excited to share their stories and some artifacts from those Cincinnati sisters with our visitors. We also have tours and programs and all kinds of things.
Who are some of the, pick whichever one you like, who are some of the sisters whose stories you're most attached to or most fond of?
Sure. I have a special place in my heart for the Civil War era. My three times great aunt was a sister who served here in Emmitsburg, and she helped do health care during the Battle of Gettysburg, Antietam, et cetera. And one of the stories, we don't tell her story, unfortunately, but we do tell Sister Anthony O'Connell, who is a Sister of Charity of Cincinnati, and she is an incredible woman. In the Battle of Shiloh in 1862, she realized after the battle that more people were dying from infection mm-hmm. than from actual wounds. Mm-hmm. And so she came up with what essentially became battlefield triage and started grouping injuries and infection by their type. She went on to become a doctor, and we actually have on display her medical bag, her glasses, her rosary, her pocket knife. She was so well known that both sides, the Union and the Confederacy, referred to her as an angel of the battlefield, which went on to become a pretty famous moniker for the work that the sisters did all throughout the United States during that era. So she's definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, one of the perhaps not as well known stories about the Civil War is that of the 700 roughly odd thousand deaths in the Civil War, almost half of them were due to disease, not to enemy bullets. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously related to the kinds of unsanitary conditions in camps and so forth. So the work of the sisters had a very immediate impact during the Civil War. You also, I'm looking at the website, and it's really interesting the way that you have it set up. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit, if I can, about the five eras that you have mm-hmm. it divided up. So it starts with the early Republic, 1809 to 1861. When did Elizabeth Ann Seton actually found the order?
Sure. So she moved here to Emmitsburg in 1809 and founded the Sisters of Charity of St. Joseph's here in Emmitsburg that year.
Okay. So it makes sense then to start with 1809. And that, of course, 1809 through 1861 takes us up to the brink of the Civil War and the work that the sisters did then. And then you've talked about one of your favorite stories about the Civil War. What about America Booms from 1864 to 1917?
Sure. So a real hallmark of that era, and I do have to sort of caveat, we're grouping a lot of little eras inside of these larger eras for the sake of one tiny exhibit. But in the America Booms era, in the turn of the century, really big focus on education. Mm-hmm. And that's something the sisters are very well known for. In 1917, when education was mandated by the U.S. government, the sisters were already teaching over 1.8 million students around the nation. So they had kind of in the 1860s really started this, and even as early as 1809 with Elizabeth Ann Seton's school. And one of my favorite sisters from that era is actually Blessed Blandina Segal, another Cincinnati. Ah. She went out west to Colorado and eventually to New Mexico. She helped start private and public schools and has an incredible book that she wrote called At the End of the Santa Fe Trail. I would highly recommend folks read that. And, of course, she's up for sainthood, God willing, so please get involved in her cause and pray for her to be elevated to that glorious title and so that she can intercede for us and our nation and our education. Yeah.
You know, Becca, that era of 1864 to 1917 is an era of rapid immigration to the United States from Europe, Italy, Germany, Ireland, and other places. And there are two characteristics of this immigration related somewhat. One is that they were many from non-English speaking countries. And the second is that the vast majority of them from these countries were Catholic. That caused, unfortunately, a rise in anti-Catholic sentiment, the so-called Know Nothing Party. And were the sisters involved directly in trying to work through and negotiate the anti-Catholic sentiment as it increased in the late 19th and the early 20th century?
Oh, yes. They were very involved from the beginning. That even starts as early as 1830, mm-hmm. The first immigration influx. But at that time, later around the turn of the century, what you're referring to, a big reason education was mandated was to sort of, quote-unquote, Americanize immigrants.
Exactly.
And so the sisters did such a beautiful job of living in the communities that they served in. And so they knew the people that they were serving, and they honored traditions from other cultures and kind of work them in. So very famously, too, Sister Blandina, even in the same room, educating students of color, different immigrants, Native American children as well, and just sort of trying to really, as they teach us today, that we all have something in common, and particularly Catholic, non-Catholic, we're all American children, we're all children of God, first and foremost. And so these women really, on a person by person, student by student, challenged that. They would often do that in a lot of other ways with their orphanages, their hospitals that they were starting during that era, just sort of living alongside people and breaking down those barriers.
Yeah, and one of the things that was so important about the sisters' ministry in this era is the development of schools, because of course, as you said, that you know the quote unquote public schools were actually Protestant religious schools in all but name, and there were many laws passed in this era, basically saying that that funds could not go to quote sectarian schools. Which obviously meant Catholic schools, but obviously public money went to the Protestant public schools. Mm-hmm. So the work of the sisters in that era is extremely important. And I think and tell us if I'm wrong about this, but I think that we owe the rapid increase in parochial and other types of Catholic schools to the sisters in this very era of the post-Civil War era.
Oh, definitely. Like I said, around that time, 1917, mm-hmm. When the U.S. bishops mandated that every Catholic parish would also have a school, these women had already established hundreds, if not thousands, of those schools and went on to do so. So we're definitely in their debt.
It's like the bishops say, we need schools, and the sisters say, hold my beer, right?
Yeah.
Now, the next era is 1917 to 1954, and of course, this encompassed the end of World War I through World War II, and then Reconstruction after World War II. My understanding is that the sisters, even though obviously the U.S. is their primary mission field, did not stay at home during either this World War I or World War II. Tell us a little bit about how the sisters expanded their mission to other countries during the wars.
Yeah, so there was a big effort on the home front for sure, helping in all the ways many women did in that time. But one of the stories we tell is a daughter of charity, Sister Chrysostom Moynihan, who took 90 lay women to the front lines in Italy during World War I as part of the lay expeditionary forces to do, again, battlefield health care and just health care along the the battles. And so she is an incredible woman. If you come on site, you'll see a beautiful mural photograph of these women lined up on their way, ready to go. So it's very inspiring what they did. Then, really, and now.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I mean, we read about the what were called the ambulances, which is, you know, back then was not a vehicle like we think of today, but rather core of women, nurses, oftentimes nuns, who administered to the wounded in the battlefield and the sick and injured in hospitals. And to see that the sister's so involved in this, not just here but abroad as well, is really encouraging. And I think one of the things that you also recover in the 1917 to 1954 era is how the sisters were so instrumental in modernizing healthcare, medicine, and hospitals. I really think this is a story that we need to shout about the legacy of the Catholic Church in general and the sisters in specific, because healthcare and scientific advancement in healthcare is so much a part of the Catholic legacy, not just in the United States, but around the world. And the sisters were right in the midst of that.
I agree. I think that is probably the most underrepresented legacy of the sisters. Both our Sisters of Charity and the Daughters of Charity, but just all the religious communities, the work that they've done to develop medicine is incredible. Actually, not to keep praising the sisters in Cincinnati, but
that's why
Sister
we're here.
Eugene Marie Karp, yeah. Sister Eugene Marie Karp is a great example of that. We tell her story in the exhibit. She directed one of the first blood transfusions for a newborn. And that went on to cure the pH factor, the blue baby syndrome, that was one of the leading causes in the early 1900s of infant mortality. She then goes on to become the administrator of Good Samaritan Hospital, the president of the Ohio Hospital Administration, the Cincinnati Hospital Council. She just, what a force for your area and for medical advancement. And I've even met people that have her to thank for their babies being alive, you know, how many years later. It's incredible.
And again, part of the untold story of the Sisters of Charity. You know, Cincinnati, the Archdiocese of Cincinnati has combined parishes into what we call parish families. And there are three parishes in my parish family, one of which is St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Parish in Milford, Ohio. So we're very close to it. Now, we have about a minute or so left. Tell us about, in the time we have left, about the modern age, 1955 to 2000s. This, of course, is an era that includes social upheaval, sexual revolution, and the turbulent 60s. What were the sisters up to during this era, the modern age, as you call it on the website?
Yeah, sure. So in the 20th century, women in general finally are sort of given a more public voice. And so that's when we see the sisters in particular start to use that voice. They are involved in the civil rights movement in a big way. They participate in several famous marches, like the Selma to Montgomery March, the March on Harlem, etc. We have some really amazing murals from that time. One of them works with Dr. King in Chicago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., of course. They start going out from the United States, because as we all know, in that era, we had no problems here in the U.S., but they start spreading out and helping other countries and just continuing to be a voice for the voiceless, whether that's racial inequality or other types of inequality. They're one of the only people to treat AIDS, HIV patients in the 80s. And now today, they have representatives on the UN. They continue to just sort of advocate for social justice in particular, which is something we're very proud of for them.
This is a very exciting exhibit, and I hope you have great success with it and lots of visitors. I've been speaking with Becca Corbell about America 250 programming at the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Becca, where can people find out more about the shrine?
SetonShrine.org is the main place. Follow us on social media as well. Those are the two main places.
And if you go to the website, you can go right to Do the Good, and it's a wonderful experience online, previewing a wonderful experience in person. Thanks for being with us today on Driving Home the Faith.
Thank you so much.